of Chicago. So I know how that goes for some as they commute and all that fun stuff, getting home from work. But if you're able to meet with us at 6:30, we'll try to, we won't try. We're going to meet with God because we're two or three are there. And I know there'll be two because I'm pastor. So I got two of us already lined up. And that's where the Lord is in the midst. And I believe in prayer. I'm certainly not an expert. I'm a fellow traveler, but I am convinced that's where the battle's won and lost. And we'll talk about that, I'm sure. The Lord will lead us to some messages and texts about that. But let's go to 1 Chronicles chapter number 16. We're going to begin reading in verse number 10. And I'm going to take the text out of last few words of verse number 11, but we'll read there to kind of give you an idea where we are. It says, "Glory ye in his holy name, let the heart of them rejoice that seek the Lord. Seek the Lord in his strength," and here's our text, "seek his face continually." You know, I don't know about you, but God, when he asks us to do something, all of it's important. Though the Bible does tell us in the book of Matthew that there are least commandments. Now, they're not unimportant commandments. The least commandments, in fact, God says, if you do and teach them, you'll be great in the kingdom of God. So they're certainly not insignificant. But God does say there's least commandments, which indicates that there are great commandments. And I don't know about you, but anything God asks us to do all the time probably is very important. What do you think? Pray without ceasing. Rejoice. There are certain things God says, this needs to be an attitude of your life. This needs to be all the time. And here's what God says. Seek his face. Anyone want to tell me what it is? Continually. Now, the thing I want you to note about this is I've learned this about the Bible. If you don't understand what the command means, pretty good chance you're not going to do it. What do you think? So I got a question for you tonight. What does it mean to seek God's face? I mean, what does it really mean? Is that different from seeking God? So what does it mean to seek his face? Well, I think it's an important question, don't you? Because if God tells us to do it all the time, if it's an attitude of life, we need to understand exactly what it means to seek his face. Now, one of the disadvantages we're at, and it's a severe disadvantage, is we live in 2020. See, in 2020, you can see somebody's face, and that might mean something different than 200 years ago. You say, what are you talking about? Well, let's think about it. When the Old Testament was written, if you saw somebody's face, you know what that meant, don't you? You were in their actual presence. There's no other possibility. Back when I was a kid, I hate to admit it, but I'm sure some of you admit it as well, I used to watch a futuristic cartoon called The Jetsons. Okay, how many in here watched it? You admit it, you watched The Jetsons. Okay, good. A lot of other old people in the room as well. Okay. But anyway, I watched The Jetsons. And in The Jetsons, I don't know that I thought it this way, but I probably, as a kid, thought, that'll never happen in my lifetime. Well, you know, there's certain things that, well, we don't fly around in cars yet. And we don't have robots for maids yet, though I did see a church last week had a little robot that vacuumed. I thought, that is really weird. Okay, it didn't look like Rosie, though, for you Jetsons fans. But there's one thing on the Jetsons that has come to pass. Unbelievable. This is going to shock some of you millennials, but back on the Jetsons, if you made a phone call, you could see the other person. Like, whoa, that'll never happen. Well, it's here. I guess they call it Skype, FaceTime. Now, I personally don't do it. I guess it's an age thing. And also about Skype and FaceTime, they have not perfected the technology because every time I look at Skype or FaceTime, the person's nose looks about twice as large as it normally is. Now, when you're Dutch, that's one part of the anatomy you don't want to accentuate, okay? So I'm not going to use that. I don't use that technology very much, that FaceTime and Skype stuff. But, you know, it's amazing. You can literally be miles away and you can be talking face-to-face. That's our technology today. And now I do travel most of the time with my wife, and of course my girls are now in college, but one's out. But and the day they traveled with us as well. But during the summertime, I often go to camps and preach alone. And when I we'd obviously call some places I couldn't even call because there was no signal. But when I got home and come up that driveway, and somebody picked me up at the airport, take me to the house, drop me off, come up that driveway, my wife and daughters came out. I will tell you this. I could have Skyped her and phone called them in some of those cases. In some cases, I did call them. But I will tell you this. There is absolutely no substitute for their actual presence. See, I can Skype my wife, and I'm just going to be honest with you. I can kiss the phone, but that's not near as good as kissing my wife. You men with me on this deal? Okay. See, the point is, I can be Skyping my wife on a computer, and I can hug the computer, but I'd rather hug my wife. Okay, there's no substitute. There is no substitute for the actual presence of somebody, right? that you love, that you care about. Okay, so we understand that when you see somebody's face in the Old Testament, you were in their very presence. In our culture, that hasn't happened, so I've tried to help us understand what's going on here. So what does it mean to seek God's face? Okay, let me just say this right now. Is God in this room tonight? And the answer is yes. Okay, I sing the mighty power of God for a variety of reasons. But in there it says this, everywhere that man can be, thou God art present there. Right at this very moment, God is present in this room. Okay, that's true. We all know that. Hey, I hate to tell you this, theologically. If you went to Baptist College of Ministry and took Bible doctrines, one of the doctrines you would deal with is the doctrine of God. And in the doctrine of God, you deal with attributes. And one of God's attributes is omnipresence. God's everywhere. Okay, now we get that all, and somebody can pass Bible doctrines, and somebody can get that doctrine down, but that is no substitute, don't miss this, for the actual presence of God. You say, preacher, what do you mean? Okay, sometimes we call it the manifest presence of God. See, it's one thing for us to know that God is here, but there's some of you in this room, it's not a doctrine, it's a reality. In other words, you live, or you're living right now, in the presence, the manifest presence of God. Now, let me just simply say, you say, preacher, is it experiential? And I'm going to be honest with you. The word experiential always kind of bothers me, only because you can have deceptive experiences. I've been witnessing to people who had experiences, and you're really skeptical about the experiences. Okay, so I kind of, though it is experiential, there's no doubt about the manifest presence of God being experiential, I prefer, and this is not original with me, to call it a spiritual reality. It's a spiritual reality. The difference between a reality and experience could be deceptive, it could be real. So I use the word reality, which assumes we're talking a reality. But it's not physical. Now, one of the problems we have with this, I'm just going to be dead honest with you, again, is we're Americans. You know, our culture screams at us that reality is interpreted by what you assimilate through the five senses. And our culture is constantly throwing experience at people that excites their five senses. And I'm not saying it's all wrong. Like back when I was a kid, it's funny, I'm right here in the middle of Tennessee area. I remember as a kid going to the Bill Rice Ranch, my uncle used to lead singing over there, Jim Stoutenborough. Anybody ever knew Jim Stoutenborough? He's my uncle. And I'm named after him anyway. He's my mother's brother. But I remember going down there and Bill Rice Ranch, stopping at a little country store, I'm sure it's gone now, gas station, whatever, and buying a candy bar for a nickel. Okay, so I remember back when I was a kid, we had candy. You know, candy. I think it was a Charleston Chew. I remember that big, long thing like that for a nickel. But anyway, how many remember when candy was 5 cents? How many remember that? These are all the people that raised their hand about the Jetsons. Okay, there they are. Same people. Okay, now, you say, what do you say all that? Because, you know, back when I was a kid, candy was all right. But have you ever looked at the candy today? I mean, you ever taken one of those Sour Patch Kids? I mean, it does something to you. I mean, it is sour, like, whoa. And some of the flavors they come up with, like, wow. You know, in other words, we live in a culture that caters to the five senses. And they make money doing it. Don't you think about that? Back when I was a kid, they had roller coasters. You know what I'm talking about? Now they have roller coasters. In fact, they tell us that roller coaster technology has become so cutting edge that if they go any further, people are going to black out. Wow, that'd be neat, wouldn't you? Right at your own risk, you'll probably black out. Okay, you know, wow. I don't know about you. I look at some of those roller coasters and thinking, man alive, you'd have to have a hearse on the other end of that thing if I rode it. I mean, I wouldn't make it. I've kind of reached that point in life where I really don't like to have blood on just one side of my body. You know what I'm talking? Kind of like it everywhere. But you kids, you're into that kind of stuff. You know what I'm talking about? That's but roller coasters. And in fact, as a kid, there was an amusement park built north of Chicago, and called Marriott's Great America, and now it's called Six Flags Great America. And I remember in my high school years going to that thing, and they had put in a new roller coaster, and they advertised it this way. Went upside down 4 times. Wow. We thought that was unbelievable. And I haven't been back to that park since my teenage years, probably never will. But anyway, I drive by it, and I look in there and try to find that ride, and it's dwarfed by 15 million other roller coasters. I think they moved it over to the kiddie ride section. You know what I'm talking about? That's our culture today. We cater to the experience, the thrill, you know, and the rush. And, you know, back when I was a kid, we really didn't have extreme sports. Well, I take that back. We had a guy named Evel Knievel. How many remember Evel Knievel? Same people are raising their hand. It's just kind of funny about this, okay? Evel Knievel, yeah, he was fact, I read an article on Evel Knievel in USA Today a few years ago, and they said Evel Knievel, at that time he's died since then, every waking moment he spent in pain. He'd broken almost every bone in his body. And the basic article said Evel Knievel is looking for something. He's looking for something to satisfy. And the article was basically he hadn't found it yet. He tried alcohol. He tried moral failure. He tried just about everything you can think of. He tried his thrills with his stunts, and nothing satisfied. Well, we all know that it never would outside of the Lord, kind of what we talked about this morning. But the point I'm making is, today, you ever walked by Walmart, just kind of going through and see the television department, look up at Extreme Sports? I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, man alive, that's moronic. One mistake and you're going to have arthritis for the rest of your life. You know, some of us, every sports injury we ever have, we are reminded of it every time a front comes in. Okay, thinking that was stupid. Why did I do that? Okay, but the point is, today we have everybody's looking for fulfillment. They're looking for satisfaction, like we talked about this morning, but they're looking for it in the arena of the sensory. Now, here's what I want you to help you out. You do not meet God in the sensory. Now, don't get me wrong. The Spirit affects us, the senses, but you do not assimilate God with your five senses. That's not, you don't see God with physical eyes. You don't hear God with physical ears. We don't touch God with physical touch. Well, you say, preacher, how does God manifest His presence so that I know God is here? Years ago, I was in a Christian school. It was one of those, I think about 10 years ago now. It was one of those schools that I absolutely knew within the first day God was going to do something big. Because when the very first day teachers were stopping us in the hallway, oh, we're thrilled to have your team here. We want you to know we're praying for you. Man, our school's in, we got problems. These kids are needy. And I've learned this. Whenever people are overwhelmed and burdened about the need, they're going to pray. And anyway, we had the thing. I had a wonderful prayer meeting on a Friday, and about three quarters of the student body was in that prayer meeting. And I'll never forget that God was all over. It started slow, and then boom, it just, you knew God had stepped through the door. And I remember when that thing was over, about 45 minutes later, a senior in high school looked at me and said, Brother Van Gelderen, could I say something? I said, absolutely. He stood to his feet, and his face was filled with awe. And he looked at the student body and said, God was here. Now I want to ask you a question. What was he talking about? I remember just a couple of years ago, probably 3 years ago, sitting down at one of the lunch tables at Baptist College of Ministry. There were two little girls there. One was a sophomore, one was a freshman. And the sophomore looked at me, oh, Dr. Jim, we're so glad you sat down here. We got to tell you what happened last night. So we all got our food, sat down, and said, well, tell me what happened last night. She said, we started room devotions at 10:30. She said, we were all burdened for family members. We all got family members that are away from God. And she said, we started our prayer meeting at 10:30. She said, Dr. Jim, we didn't finish till 1:30. She said, I honestly felt in the middle of that prayer meeting that if I'd opened my eyes, I would have seen him. Now, she wouldn't have. Because what she was experiencing was not physical. It was spiritual. There were prayers answered in that prayer meeting that are absolutely stunning. That little girl's brother traveled with me just a year later because he had totally been revolutionized. God had totally revolutionized him. I saw him preach a team meeting, 70 kids in the team meeting, and revival broke out in that Christian school, in that team meeting. Everybody got right with God but two kids on the team. This is a kid who was one of the worst kids in the youth group just simply 12 months before. But in answer to that young lady's prayers, God revolutionized her brother's life. God showed up in that prayer meeting. My dad used to say there's nothing in all the world worse than a prayer meeting. When God doesn't show up. He said there's nothing greater in all the world than a prayer meeting when God does show up. Boy, isn't that the truth. So what are we talking about? We're talking about the presence of God, the manifest presence of God. You say, preacher, what are you? Help me out. What are you talking about? Okay, here's what I'm talking about. God is a spirit, and they that worship Him must worship Him. Help me out. In spirit and in truth. Here's where we connect with God. In the spiritual realm, surrounded with truth. You connect with God in the spiritual realm. Now, I'm going to be honest with you, friend. I believe that God created us to literally fellowship with Him. I'm talking not about an intellectual fellowship. I'm not talking about a cerebral fellowship, though obviously we use our mind and our emotions in our walk with God. The key is I'm talking about a spiritual relationship. And I will tell you, when I was in high school, I knew about God. I believe I was a believer. God called me to preach clear. I responded to that call. I began to see God's presence in my life, at least in preaching. But I began to get thirsty for something. I began to get thirsty for God. And I began to realize, God, I can't. See, I knew my parents were a little older. My dad and mom were 35 when I was born. They both were in bad health. My mom struggled with cancer for 9 years before God took her home a day before her 65th birthday. My dad died of congestive heart failure at 72. When I was in college preparing for the ministry, I knew something. My parents can get a hold of God. I had a grandmother. She could get a hold of God. I knew they walked with God. I did not doubt the existence of God. He was too real. I saw him in these people's lives. Absolutely transforming. But I knew something else. I didn't know him like they did. I didn't begin to know God like they did. And I will certainly say that my quest has certainly been imperfect, no doubt about it. And it's waxed and waned, and sometimes waned for a long time. But I will say something about college. I decided in my 4 years of college, the most important thing that I had to accomplish in those 4 years is I had to find God. And I began a search of God. Now, I had my devotions at another time in the day, but at the very last half hour of the day, sometimes the last hour of the day, before I had to be in for room devotions, I remember going out, I don't talk about this often, going out on this athletic field there at the Bible college I was at, and there was a little area back that you could kind of be alone. And I did one thing in that time. I said, God, I've got to find you. I began to seek God. I knew that the key to the Christian life and the key to effectiveness in ministry was not just academic preparation. I knew there was something spiritual, and I didn't have it, and I needed it. And I will tell you, friends, I won't go into my whole journey because it's an interesting journey, and the experience is not the issue. What I'm really after is, do you know God? In other words, it's like this, friends. All of us could know God better. I get that. But have there been times in your life recently where you met with God and knew He was there? See, seeking God's face is, don't miss this, seeking the manifestation of His presence in your life. Seeking the manifestation of His presence in your life. Now, how often are you and I supposed to want the manifestation of the presence of God in our life? And the answer is, all the time. It is right for you and I, in fact, it's commanded for you and I, to live our life wanting God. Wow, what a thought. Now, the amazing thing I want you to understand about God is, and this is going to shock you, He doesn't play hide-and-go-seek. Somehow we think He plays hide-and-go-seek. We really do. We think that He doesn't really want to meet with us. But nothing can be further than the truth. Deuteronomy 4:29, but if from thence thou shalt seek the Lord thy God, thou shalt find Him. If you seek for Him with all your heart, with all your mind. Jeremiah 29, verse 3, I believe. Excuse me, I think I got that reference wrong. The reference is missing. But it goes, then you shall seek for Me and find Me when you search for Me with all your heart. The reference will come to me in a moment. But the point is, friends, God is simply saying, I'm not playing hide-and-go-seek. If you seek Me, you will find Me. And that's the great truth. But you say, well, preacher, what does that look like? I mean, what does it look like? Okay, here's what it looks like. Read the book of Psalms. You know what I find in most of the Psalms? The psalmist wants God. Most of the time it's David, but sometimes it's somebody else. They want God. How about Psalm 63? O God, Thou art my God. Early will I seek Thee. My soul thirsteth for Thee. My flesh longeth for Thee. In a dry and thirsty land where no water is, to see Thy power and Thy glory, so as I have seen Thee in the sanctuary. Just a few verses later, verse number 8, my soul followeth hard after God. You know, David wanted God. As the heart heart panteth after the water brook, so my soul panteth after Thee, O God. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. Psalm 42. See, the psalmist wanted God. Read the Psalms and you'll see a man can't live without God. God, I can't go on without You. God, I need You. I've got to have You. And I will tell you, friends, that the thing we need to understand about the seeking is, number one, you need to understand that if you seek Him, you will find Him. It's a simple promise. So seeking God's face, it is a pursuit. So it doesn't happen automatically. And the point is, you and I have to make a choice. Now, here's the problem with seeking God's face. As we've already kind of talked about, our culture affects us. But there's another way our culture affects us, and it's this way. We have things what I would call thirst dollars. Now, it's interesting to me, when God talks about seeking God, the pursuit is one of the metaphors He uses. But another one He uses is thirst. Thirst. How about Isaiah 44:3? I will pour water on him who is thirsty. Isaiah 41, verse 17, when the poor and needy seek water and there is none, and their tongue faileth for thirst, I, the Lord, will hear them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. You know what I love about the thirst metaphor? It is not meritorious. Many times we get into meritorious thinking. You say, preacher, what are you talking about? Okay, how about this? Let's imagine you're really thirsty. Let's go in the summertime, you out, you know, you're sweating, you're, and you get thirsty, and so you remember, oh yeah, McDonald's, they got drinks for a buck. Okay, and get that sweet tea or that Coca-Cola or whatever. And so you go down in there and you say, I'd like a Coke. And they hand you the cup and they say, that'll be a buck what? What do you have for tax here? Buck five? Buck ten? Unbelievable. Man, you're not too far from California. What are they, a buck 50? I don't know. Okay, but anyway, so here it is, buck 10. And you say, what do you mean a buck 10? Can't you see I'm sweating? Can't you see I'm dying of thirst? I deserve that Coca-Cola. You know what they're going to do at McDonald's? Throw you out the door. You know why? Because your thirst doesn't earn you anything. All your thirst does is this. The more thirsty you are, the more you're willing to sacrifice to meet that need. You know, if you were dying of thirst, literally, you'd be willing to pay a whole lot of money for a bottle of water. Why? Because that water is becoming more and more important as time goes on. I don't know if you've ever read Unbroken by, it's a book about Louis Zamperini, the Olympic star who ended up being World War II, shot down, and I think they hold the record for being at sea the longest and surviving. It's really an amazing story. But the author does a phenomenal job of helping you vicariously feel the thirst. Can you imagine being so dehydrated you can put your finger in your mouth, pull it out, and it wouldn't be wet? That's almost unthinkable, isn't it? Become delirious because you're so thirsty. You see thunderstorms. They would give all their energy to go to a thunderstorm to gather the water. And, of course, they amazingly survived. But that's what we're talking about, thirst. So the truth is, in the real realm, that's the physical realm. This is the real realm, too, the spiritual realm. But in the physical realm, when you and I are thirsty, we can't ignore it. You ever gotten a meal that had a lot of salt in it? Maybe you didn't know it, like it was like a Mongolian or some kind of a Chinese, whatever, a bunch of salt in it. Have you ever woken up at 3 in the morning dying of thirst? And you're just, yeah, really, really, man, I'm just thirsty. In the physical realm, you can't ignore extreme thirst. You can't. It consumes you, and pretty soon you're willing to pay whatever it is to get that thing taken care of. Now, here's my point, friends. Why is in the spiritual realm that doesn't happen? Can I say that most Christians are dehydrated and they're not concerned about getting that satisfied through the reality of Jesus' presence in any fashion? Why? I'm going to tell you why. We're distracted in this culture. I call them thirst dullards. They don't quench the thirst. They just dull it, so even though we're dying of thirst, we kind of forget that we are. I mentioned a lot of technology issues, media issues. They just dull our thirst. Just the distraction of life. Have you ever noticed how rare it is to be alone? And I encourage some people, you want to meet with God? On that commute, turn the radio off and start talking to God. You know, turn that cell phone to nothing so you don't hear the beeps. And all that stuff. We get distracted, don't we? All I'm going to simply say, friends, is seeking God has to be purposeful. You have to say, God, I got to have you. I can't go on without you. God, I've got now I want to teach you something else. This kind of goes along with it. Number two, time. Not only there have to be a seeking and a thirst. You have to be purposeful. I'm going to do this. I've got to have God. I recognize I need God. Number two, it takes time. It takes time. Have you ever noticed that in a relationship, a valuable relationship, have you ever noticed that the more time you spend with somebody, the better you know them? Now, the truth is, for all you kids out here, you know your mother pretty well. You do. And for many of you kids in here, and even you dads out here, you know when you walk through the door and you take one look at your wife and you're thinking, uh-oh, we need to be real careful. Okay, this is not a good day. Now, how do you know that? How do you pick that up? How do you know she's struggling? Well, because time. It's like this. And our wives know us. And they know. Okay, he's getting on edge. What does it do? It takes time. And the more spend with somebody, the more you understand them. You begin to get where they're coming from. You understand their strengths, their weaknesses, their propensities, their language, the words that they use, the little mannerisms that they have. You get to know them. Now, that's a human illustration, friends. But I will tell you, friends, you cannot microwave a relationship with God. It takes time. And I will tell anybody in here, God's not a respecter of persons. Over the years, my dad brought in a lot of preachers of yesteryear that walk with God. I remember when he brought in John R. Rice. John R. Rice was an amazing man in his final years and preached a revival at my dad's home church. And a guy by the name of Silas Fox. Silas, anybody ever heard of that name, Silas Fox? I called him the White Fox of India. He was a missionary to India, and he was under the mentorship of Praying Hyde. It goes back that far. Boy, that guy, I mean, the guy walked with God. It was almost like he was in a different realm. Just in India, my dad said he was with him one time, and he ran up to an Indian man on the street and said, "Did you hear? A man was dead 3 days, and he rose again." And the guy says, "You've got to be kidding me." And he preached Jesus. That was Silas Fox. Quite an amazing man. I've been around some godly Christians, but I can guarantee you my grandmother would probably be the number one. I mean, when I was around my grandmother, you knew you'd stepped into the throne room. You just knew it. She spent hours with God every day. Just a remarkable woman. And I remember as a little boy, you wanted to avoid Grandma at all costs. Because when we were at Grandma's house and she said, "Jimmy, come over here and sit," you knew you were in for an hour of absolute misery. You say, "Why?" Because here you are, little elementary kid, you're not right with God. And all of a sudden, you're sitting next to God, almost. She'd take out that Bible, she'd start preaching to you. I mean, you have to understand it was compassionate preaching. Often tears coming down her cheeks. Then she'd tell you how much she loved Jesus, how good Jesus was. Then she'd start praying. I'm telling you, when you're not right with God, it's sheer agony, sheer agony. But I will tell you this, friends. I look back and realize that woman walked with God. She had something I want. And as a college student, I knew the reality of God. I knew my grandmother lived it. I knew my mom and dad lived it. But I guarantee you with my grandmother, the reason she's top of the list, time. She spent a life trusting Jesus, spending time with God. She didn't have an easy life. She probably married out of the will of God. My grandfather was a very carnal man. I hope he's in heaven. Only God knows. And it was not an easy life. But she walked with God, and I know what it was. Time. Spend time with God. I'm just going to tell you right now, you want a relationship with God, it's going to take an investment of time. It's going to say, being purposeful, I got to spend time with God. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. In your pursuit of God, some days it's going to be like God's here and you'll just be like you're carried. And other days it will be a battle. Don't give up on the battle days. Don't give up when the fog rolls in. Don't give up when it seems like the sun is setting on your Christian walk. No, that's when you need to battle through. But it is pursuit. It's time. And the more time you spend with God, the more you begin to understand the ways of God. We're all on a journey. I'm on a journey. There's some of you ahead of me, I'm sure. But the point is, you got to spend time. Young person, if you want God's hand on your life, you're going to spend time with God. You gotta say, "God, I can't." It's not just going through the motions. It's not checking, "Oh, I read my chapters, I spent my 10 minutes in prayer," and that's all I'm talking about. I tell our students at Baptist College of Ministry, you can have your devotions and not seek God, but buddy, if you seek God, you'll have your devotions. See, the whole idea is, "God, I need you today. I need your presence." Do you know you can live in the presence of God at work? Do you know you can live in the presence of God at home? God wants to manifest His presence. My grandmother, I'm telling you, I am absolutely convinced she lived in the presence of God. And you can tell it. Remarkable woman. She'd tell you God answered a prayer before you got the answer. She knew it. So my point simply is this, friends. It's going to take an investment. And it's like this. If you're out here thinking, "Oh, I got to spend an hour with God," you miss the whole point. It's not, "Oh, I got to spend time with God." It's, "I got to spend time with God." There is a difference, isn't there? I at Baptist College of Ministry, several years ago, noticed a young lady. And I noticed she was sad. She really didn't smile. I knew there were spiritual needs in her life. Kind of knew a little bit about the home to know there were some needs there in that home. I don't know, it was probably toward the end of her time there. We began an emphasis. Some of you are familiar with this. The hour with God, the bended knee emphasis. And it was just a remarkable journey that God led in. It was really remarkable. I don't have time to go into that. I'll maybe do it later. But I remember that I came back, like I'm out now, and I came back at the end of year in May. I'm sitting in chapel, and we're singing a song on prayer. And as we're singing a song on prayer, this young lady was sitting right over here. She was like looking through the roof, like it wasn't even there. It's like she was looking into heaven with tears streaming down her face. I hadn't, and it was like her face was glowing. I'm thinking, what happened to her? Like, this is totally different. Later, I started teasing her. I said, what happened to you? Are you an imposter and they kidnapped the other one? What's going on here? I was just joking with her. She smiled at me real big. She knew what I meant. She said, Dr. Jim, she said I was miserable. I think I'd tell me something I didn't know. Yeah, I knew that. She said I was miserable. She said, I saw all these students spending an hour with God, and man, their lives were being changed. They had something I didn't have. She said, I'm going to spend an hour with God if it kills me. And basically, she inferred for a few days it did kill her. She spent that hour with God, and then she said this. She's seeking God. She said, about fourth, fifth day, I don't know. She said, someone in there, I'm having my hour with God, and I'm telling you, her face is glowing. She said, all of a sudden, He was there. Do you know what she was talking about? She was talking about a manifestation of the presence of God. I'll be honest with you. Americans are so busy. You go over to mission field right now. You go to Iraq right now. Talk to Christians who could die tomorrow. They have the glow of heaven. They walk in the presence of God. You know why? Because they have to. We Americans somehow don't have to. We can survive. We got money. We got issues. We don't. How can we say this? We never say it, but we live like it. We don't need God. See, my point is, when you come to a point where I can't go on like this, God's not a respecter of persons. There's not a person in this room who couldn't live in the presence of God. It'll take time. It won't happen automatically. But you seek Him, you will find Him. It's a pursuit. And I remember, like I said this morning, when I was in high school, I made a decision. I'm pursuing that. Don't understand it, but I'm pursuing that. And I have certainly pursued it very imperfectly. But it is a pursuit. I am very glad that that's the pursuit of my life. And I will tell you something, friends. It takes time. But there's a third thing that you need to understand it takes. Not only do you have to be purposeful and trust, thirst. You've got to thirst. In other words, it's not automatic. It's got to be a decision. I need God. It's not meritorious. You're not earning anything. You're thirsty. I can't go on this way. I need God. Number two, you commit yourself to time. It's going to take time. And then number three, don't miss this, expectancy. Expectancy. You say, what do you mean expectancy? Well, I want to ask you a question. What would you think if you were soul winning? Okay, so here you are. You're in a soul winning situation, and you go through the gospel, and somebody prays the sinner's prayer, and they say this. Okay, you just went through John 3:16, whosoever believeth in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life, and you go through the whole thing. And they pray the sinner's prayer, and then they look up, and you say, if you died right now, where'd you go? Well, I'd go to hell. I don't think He saved me. Would you be excited about that salvation decision? Well, the answer is no. Why? Because they didn't believe. Here's the key to a belief. If you want to say, what is belief? Sounds kind of abstract and it's kind of out there. Okay, here's the key. Expectancy. When you expect God to do what He said He'd do, that's faith. And when you say, Jesus, I'm a sinner going to hell. Jesus, save me. And you get up and say, I'm expecting you to do it because you said you would. You just got saved. Why? Because you expected God to do what He said He'd do. That's believing. Okay, so here it is. If God says, seek me, and you'll find me, if you seek Him, but don't expect to find Him, you know what that's called? Unbelief. And without faith, it's impossible to please God. But he that cometh to God must believe that He is. Hang on. And He is rewarder of them. Hang on. That, anybody know? Diligently seek Him. See, that's what faith is. It's believing that God's a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. In other words, God's not playing hide and go. Thirst after Him. You hunger after Him. You desire Him. You say, God, I can't go on without You. God, I've got to have You. God, I need You. I'm expecting You to show up. Now, perhaps this will help us here in our pursuit, because faith is very important. And there's no doubt that expecting God, in fact, I see two aspects to faith, and I don't have time to develop it. Number one, expecting God to lead you. And number two, expecting God to enable you to do what He's called you to do. Okay, that's part of living in the presence of God. You're expecting God to lead you and then to enable you to do what He leads you to do. So those are the two aspects of faith. But you're expecting God to show up. Expecting Him to lead you. Expecting Him to enable you. So So there's no doubt that that's a very important part. But let me just kind of tie one other thought in here. As you're saying, okay, preacher, but we're looking for experience, and et cetera. Well, again, remember, we're not looking for experience. We're looking for reality. Because experiences can be deceptive. So let me help you with an illustration that helped me in the pursuit of God. In fact, I remember as a freshman at Bob Jones University where I went to school. That was a long time ago, and I wasn't going to mention my school, but I just slipped and said, I told you the school, because things change so much that I hate to make all the disclaimers that I have to make at this point. But anyway, I won't make them. Just assume I made them. Okay, but anyway, for time's sake, let's go on. Okay, so it's funny, you know, back when I was a kid, everybody made disclaimers for the school. So I hope I'll never have to do that, but those days come. But anyway, so I'm done there. If you don't understand what I just said, just forget it. Okay, but that was for free. Now I forgot where I was. Okay, but anyway, now when I was a freshman, somebody gave me the little book, The Pursuit of God by A.W. Tozer. As a freshman in college, I read that book and my heart burned. And I'm going to tell you this. When I was done with that book, here's what I said to myself. I don't understand 90% of what that book says, but whatever that man's talking about, that's what I need. I knew I needed God. I knew Tozer was way up here and I was way down here. I still read. You ever read Oswald Chambers, My Utmost for His Highest? Half Oswald Chambers, I'm thinking, that man was way ahead of me. I don't have a clue what he's talking about. But whatever he's talking about, I think I need it. I like men who walk with God. They help you, don't they? They stir you. Realize, you know, I got to get a little deeper. I need God to do something in my heart. But that pursuit of God began in my life. And there's times I didn't understand it. I didn't understand what was going on. So I want to use an illustration that has helped me in my pursuit of God. I hope it'll help you in your pursuit of God. Well, it seemed like I'm going a different direction, but I'm really not. As I mentioned, my uncle, Jim Stoutenborough, worked down at the Bill Rice Ranch for years. And he was quite a – how many ever saw him lead the singing? How many ever saw – okay, most unusual song leader I've ever seen. And you may not have known this, but my uncle could not carry a tune in a bucket. He could not, he never sang solos, never sang duets, never sang anything. He could lead a choir and he could lead an audience, but he could not sing. But it was God's joke on music. But he could get 1,000 teenagers singing like nobody's business. He was a remarkable man. But there was something else about my uncle. He flew airplanes. When he was 16 years old, he built an airplane. Not a model airplane. He built an airplane and got a pilot's license and flew it. So, you know, 16-year-olds, you ever kind of worry about when 16-year-olds get on the road, you know what I'm talking about, particularly men that are, you know, they're, I don't know if you know this, but the prefrontal cortex does not fully develop to 25. Have you ever noticed when insurance lowers age 25? Okay, they know about brain science. Okay, but anyway, so, and the prefrontal cortex is your brakes. The prefrontal cortex is saying, don't do that. I hate to say this to all 16-year-olds, yours is not fully developed. That's why God gave you parents, okay? You're not your own brakes. They are your brakes, okay? So, but my uncle at 16 didn't have parents. You may not know this, but my uncle was an orphan. So was my mother. At 9 years old, my mother's mother died. At 14, her father died. So they were later orphans, but they were orphaned later. And so my uncle basically didn't have leadership in his life. So he built his airplane, gets a pilot's license, and he became the terror of the skies over that little town, agricultural town in Illinois called Moroa, Illinois. And he would say there'd be farmers out plowing their field, and he'd dive bomb them. He'd go, like this, and when they jumped off the tractor, he'd pull out like that. That's what my uncle would do. I'm just telling the honest truth. And he said he would fly under bridges. Here's a bridge, you know, and here's water, and he'd go, like that, right under the bridge. He told me, he says, a miracle I lived out of my teenage years. I do believe that. I do believe it was a miracle. God preserved his life. And so flying was very much and a part of his life. And early in his 20s, he became a song leader. I don't even know how he did, but he became a song leader. But where he kind of broke into it was one day, the late Dr. Bill Rice, founder of the Bill Rice Ranch, was supposed to speak at a church there. And my uncle was leading the singing. And he was an hour late. When he came to preach, when the service was over, he said, I want to see the song leader. Where is the song leader? He said, the reason I want to see the song leader is those people were the freshest I've ever seen. They were totally ready to preach. I need that song leader. Of course, eventually my uncle went down to the Bill Rice Ranch. But for a while there, my uncle was called the Flying Farmer, and he would lead revival meeting song leading all over the state of Illinois. He'd farm during the day, get in his airplane, fly to a town, get out, they'd run into the church. My uncle said more than once they had to pull them through a window to lead the singing because the auditorium was so jammed. And he would lead singing revival. He could tell you the stories. I mean, just remarkable stories. So, but sooner or later, and I think it was when he got into his 30s and that prefrontal cortex was completely developed, my uncle decided, you know what, I need to get an instrument rating. See, he couldn't fly at night. And if the storm came or fogged in, he had to get down immediately because he didn't know how to fly by the instrument panel. So later on, he got an instrument rating, but as I understand it, he didn't like flying by the instrument panel. It's like flying in a simulator. Who wants to do that? You can do that on the ground. But it's very important to have your instrument rating because if a fog comes in, you can fly in the fog. And if it gets dark, you can fly at night. So my uncle got his instrument rating and could fly at those times. But he rather fly by the seat of his pants. You know what I'm talking about? He much rather fly by the horizon, just fly just by looking at things. He much rather. Okay, that's an analogy that has helped me in my Christian life. I will tell you, friends, there's times when we're flying along in our Christian life and it's just like God's right next to us. He's our co-pilot. We're having a wonderful time. We're enjoying the presence of God. We're just enjoying everything. And all of a sudden, fog rolls in. You ever had fog roll in your Christian life and you think, God, where'd you go? You ever think that? Now, don't miss this. You say, preacher, why would God do that? You said he wants to fellowship with us. He wants to walk with us. Well, I believe that God loves fog to come in for a couple of reasons. One is this. When we begin trusting our experience more than we trust the instrument panel, he brings in the fog. Why? So we will go back to the instrument panel. And there are times, my friend, when you're seeking God, and I've had young people tell me that I'm seeking God. He seems like a million miles away. The fog's in. I don't understand what's going on. And you know what my answer is? You better fly by the instrument panel. When you fly by the instrument panel, you can fly, don't miss this, with expectancy. But you know, when I'm flying fogged in, I'm going to be honest with you. You know what my heart cry is? God, would you lift the fog? God, I need your I want you to. I'm going to fly by the instrument panel, but God, I need you. It seems like a conundrum, but it really isn't. You're seeking God. You want his presence, but at the time you're expecting, you're looking at the instrument panel, trusting God as you're flying along. So one reason I believe is so God wants us to make sure that our foundation is the instrument panel. I believe that's why he fogs us in. I'm convinced of it. Now, another reason, and there could be more than this, that I believe God fogs us in is this. We take his presence for granted. We take his presence for granted, and we get a little sloppy or lazy in our Christian life. I've had that happen more times than I'd like to admit. Maybe this illustration will help. Back when I was a kid, I was 4 years old, and my parents lived in Durango, Colorado. My dad pastored there for 6 years. Before we moved to Chicago in 1966, now y'all know how old I am, and 1966, and we flew into Chicago, and my dad became a pastor in Chicago. But anyway, I was 4 years old. I'm at this airport, Durango, Colorado. It's like one gate, you know, I'm talking about a huge airport. I'm a little kid, and I've never seen airplanes this big. I mean, I got, you know how it is, my nose up against the glass. I am just absolutely enamored by these airplanes, huge airplanes, like 16-seaters, you know what I'm talking about, just huge airplanes. And I'm just transfixed. And all of a sudden, the thought came into my 4-year-old brain, I can remember like happened yesterday. Where's Mama? Do you remember in your life when your mother was the singular thing of security in your entire life? 4 years old, that was probably it. Where's Mama? And you know how most 4-year-olds are. We know deep down we're pretty bad, you know what I'm saying? And we probably aren't thinking our mother's trying to ditch us wherever she can, trying to lose us, you know. So she didn't have to mess with it anymore. And so, you know, keeping an eye on Mom was very important. Remember that? Remember how you were 4? You don't remember that. Okay, but anyway. So I had that thought, and that panic came over me. Where's my mother? I got distracted, didn't I? I got enamored with those airplanes. And I remember turning around, and of course, as a 4-year-old, life looks different than when you're older. It kind of runs at about a 2-foot level. And so I identified my mother, not by her face, but by the skirt she was wearing, by her knees, by her shoes. And I saw a pair of legs I was absolutely convinced were my mother's. Didn't bother to look at the face. I knew it had to be my mom. And I'm telling you, it was like, I mean, I'm ready to go. I mean, it's a full steam ahead. I'm running across that airport as fast as I can go. I'll never forget wrapping my arms around those legs like that, but it wasn't my mother. I was horrified. Absolutely horrified. My mother saw the whole thing, thought it was absolutely hilarious. Came over, and I didn't think it was funny. Came over, rescued me, then laughed for about a half hour. Okay, you know what I'm talking about? You know what I learned? Don't take mama for granted. Friends, we take God for granted, don't we? We're enjoying the presence of God. We have a wonderful morning with God. And then we get a little sloppy, don't we? A little lazy spiritually. I'm friend, when the fog rolls in, God wants to get us back to three things. Number one, God, I need you. I want you. Number two, God, I need to spend time with you. Number three, I'm expecting you to show up. Same three things, hey? And that's back to the instrument panel that teaches us these truths. Resting in Him. Seeking God's face continually. It's a command from God. Can I ask every head bowed, please, and every eye closed?